in the vicious maltreatment of defenseless citizens of Salwa, where old women and young children have been gassed and clubbed at random, we have witnessed an eruption of the disease of racism which seeks to destroy all America. No American is without responsibility. The people of Selma will struggle on for the soul of the nation. But it is fitting that all Americans help to bear the burden. I call, therefore, on clergy of all faiths to join me in Selma. It was close to 50 years ago that Martin Luther King Jr. sent a telegram to faith leaders and congregations around the country to ask them to come to Selma, Alabama, and march to Montgomery, the capital of the state, as part of the campaign for voting rights for African Americans. Selma and close by Marion were chosen by African American leaders as the focus of the campaign because, in spite of repeated attempts to register, only 2% of blacks were on the voting rolls. They also anticipated that the notorious brutality of local law enforcement under Sheriff Jim Clark would attract national attention and pressure President Lyndon B. Johnson and Congress to enact new national voting rights legislation. Nonviolent demonstrations had begun early in the year, resulting in large-scale arrests. But police, along with state troopers, increased their efforts to stop the demonstrators through increased violence. In February, a state trooper shot a 26-year-old black man by the name of Jimmy Lee Jackson while he was trying to protect his mother from a nightstick. He died a few days later. The response by blacks was the planning and implementation of a march from Selma to Montgomery. On March 7, 1965, the march began. The marches went through Selma and over the Edmund Pettus Bridge, only to find a blockade on the other side with the sheriff and local state troopers facing them. Most of you have probably seen pictures and perhaps even remember this. In what has become known as Bloody Sunday, Sheriff Cloud ordered his men to advance on the demonstrators. The state troopers went with them, some mounted on horses, and together attacked the crowd with clubs and tear gas. It was that evening that King called on religious leaders from all over the nation to join him on Tuesday in our peaceful, nonviolent march for freedom. And a few days later, the march was on again, 2,000 people strong. But a federal judge had put a restraining order on the march. The civil rights leaders struggled about what to do, whether or not to disobey the judge. And the marchers, including hundreds of clergy, nevertheless, walked across the bridge. But they stopped where the Sunday attacks had occurred, and then kneeled and prayed. They returned to the other side of Selma, avoiding another confrontation with state troopers. That evening, Reverend James Reed, a white Unitarian Universalist minister from Boston who had heeded King's call, was at a restaurant with a few colleagues. When the group left the restaurant, white locals attacked the group and clubbed Reed in the head. 2 days later, Reverend James Reed died. One of his colleagues who had been there spoke of the incident at a recent General Assembly. I see.
We didn't rehearse.
I didn't know we needed to. President Johnson realized the impact that all of this was having on the country, and in a statement to Congress said, "Their cause must be our cause too, because it is not just Negroes, but really it is all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome." On March 17th, he introduced voting rights legislation to Congress. Pressure to pass legislation was still essential, and the march from Selma to Montgomery continued to be planned. This time, however, the civil rights leaders were able to get the march sanctioned by the federal judge. The marchers left Selma on March 21st, protected this time by hundreds of federalized Alabama National Guardsmen and FBI agents. The demonstrators covered between 7 to 17 miles per day and camped at night in supporters' yards. It would take 5 days to complete the march. Although the judge had limited the marchers to 300, the number of demonstrators swelled on the last day to 25,000. On the steps of the Capitol in Montgomery, King proclaimed, "The end we seek is a society at peace with itself, a society that can live with its own conscience. And that will be a day not of the white man, not of the black man, but of the day when man is man." That night, while driving Selma demonstrators back home from Montgomery, Viola D'Uzzo, a housewife from Michigan who had come to Alabama to volunteer, was shot and killed by four members of the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK. Back home, she was attending the Unitarian Universalist Church of Detroit. In the last 4 years, I've visited Selma twice. For me, it was a pilgrimage. There's a civil rights walk that people can take, and a museum where the director is very eager to tell people about what happened, where, when. It's kind of eerie and yet very moving at the same time, walking there, where all of this took place, where thousands of people put their lives on the line to counter injustice, and where UUs died. Selma seems to be very laid back and impressed me as being generally impoverished. I did not see a lot of cars, I didn't see a whole lot of people, nor an abundance of stores or industry. I did see a memorial to Jimmie Lee Jackson, James Reed, and Viola D'Uzzo. And there's also a memorial plaque of these three at the office of the Unitarian Universalist Association in Boston. The Voting Rights Act was passed on August 6, 1965. King noted that Montgomery led to the Civil Rights Act of 1957 and 1960, Birmingham inspired the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and Selma produced the Voting Rights Legislation of 1965. And yet I still wonder how long this march for equality and justice for people of color will take. The first African slaves to America arrived in Jamestown, Virginia, on a Dutch ship in 1619. And today, while the statistics are indefinite, we know that black men are killed by police at an alarming rate. We know that blacks are far more likely to be jailed for drugs than whites. We know that there are states trying once again to prevent people of color from voting. Our penal system does the same. Michelle Alexander, also a guest speaker at General Assembly and author of The New Jim Crow, writes compellingly about our prison system, which is a huge business at this point, as a new way of making sure black men in particular remain impotent in American society. Alexander claims the U.S. criminal justice system uses the war on drugs as a primary tool for enforcing traditional as well as new modes of discrimination and repression. And so the majority of young black men in large American cities are warehoused in prisons, their labor no longer needed in a globalized economy. So when will the longest march cease? When will all the people be able to cross the bridge unhindered, unfettered, and truly free? Our Unitarian Universalist Association is asking us to honor next Sunday as Selma Sunday. Thousands of people, including several hundred UUs, will gather in Selma and march in commemoration of the march 50 years ago. I we won't be in Salma, but we can kneel and pray for them. And we can remember 1965, and we can continue the difficult, tumultuous, life-giving road to justice today, but always, always nonviolently and with love. And first, we start with ourselves, in full recognition of our own biases, prejudices, and racism. But we can't wait too long to go into the world, because the world needs our healing message, that all human beings must be affirmed for their worth and dignity, and ultimately for the sacred person that each person is. Now this isn't an easy message because most people in our culture simply don't believe it. But to carry this into the world is to put our faith into action. It is to be in solidarity with those who proclaim that black lives matter, with immigrants whose lives are upended and don't know if they will be deported, with American Muslims who never know from day to day if they will be safe from hate crimes. King's words, there are some things in our social system to which all of us ought to be maladjusted. Hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. Before it is too late, we must narrow the gaping chasm between our proclamations of peace and our lowly deeds, which precipitate and perpetuate war and violence. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means.